Good morning and welcome to the April 2nd, 2025 meeting of the House Commerce, Finance, and Policy Committee. Well, a quorum is present, and our first order of business on the agenda will be the approval of minutes. I'm looking for a copy of those. Please stand by. I now have three or four copies. Thank you. Representative Van Vinsbergen, have you had a chance to review the minutes from the April 1st meeting of the Commerce Committee?
Yes, yes, Mr. Chair, I have.
And would you be willing to move those this morning?
So moved.
Representative Van Vinsbergen moves the committee meetings of April 1st. Corrections, deletions, seeing none and hearing none, all those in favor of adopting the minutes signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Those opposed, the motion prevails. A couple of housekeeping duties and details here today, folks. The Roman numeral number 3 on our agenda is a small bill that I will be presenting that we're going to be moving out of committee. And then we're going to be taking public testimony on House File 2303, which I am also the chief author of, and that is the Commerce Committee 2025 policy bill for the House. And then we'll follow that by House File 1615, which is going to be carried by Representative Stevenson, which is the omnibus cannabis policy bill here for the committee this year as well. Because tomorrow will be the day that we're going to be marking up and considering voting these two bills out, again, items 4 and 5 on your agenda, we ask that you keep your DE amendments, members, and the amendments so we don't have to reprint what's 300-plus pages. And I know it sounds a little freaky when we talk about the amount of work that we did, but literally 3 articles in that bill, in the Commerce Policy Bill, are 3 different bills that make up about 2/3 or 3/4 of that. One of them is Representative Ryer's bill. The other two are Leader Niska's bills, which we heard earlier that were the updates on some of the statutory language related to business and the like. So members, if you would keep those, that would be great. And members of the public, if you have copies of those and are planning on joining us tomorrow, we ask you to keep those as well. And then our final piece of business today will be Representative West's House File 2426, where we have a number of testifiers. Our plan and intention on that bill is to lay that bill over today. And to take public testimony. I'm going to start out by saying that the public testimony on here, because we do have almost 25 folks who want to testify in this bill today, we'll be moving rather rapidly. So we will put people on deck who's speaking, the next person in the chair, and we'll have 2 or 3 people in queue so that we can keep things moving. We will take testimony till the end of committee, 10 o'clock. If we do not get to everyone, my apologies, but you would want to talk to the people who are ahead of you, and if you happen to be in line, please observe the 2-minute rule, because you are taking your, by sharing your comments longer than the 2-minute time period, you are taking others' opportunity away from being able to speak who came in here this morning just like the rest of us did to share with the committee. Again, no action on that. We'll be taking some considerations tomorrow on the policy bill, but the committee does want to hear on this bill as well to see if there's some things we should be including in the cannabis omnibus bill on Thursday. And so we wanted to make sure we gave the public an opportunity to share information for the committee's deliberation and benefit. Again, a 2-minute warning on that is what 2 minutes is what each will have. And with that, we'll go back to item number 3, and I will ask Representative Perryman to chair the meeting, and I will take the next 2 bills from the testifying table here this morning.
Good morning, Chair O'Driscoll.
Good morning, Madam Chair and members of the committee. Thank you for the opportunity to be here this morning.
Thank you. It looks like you have the DE1 amendment, which reflects the language we passed out in the omnibus liquor bill. Would you like to move to adopt the A2 amendment?
I would like to move the move House File 1545 before the committee to be re-referred to the Committee on Labor. And then my next order of business would be to take the DE1 amendment and adopt that to House File 1545 to get the bill in the order in shape that I would like it. Thank you.
Chair Driscoll moves to adopt the DE1 amendment. Any questions? Ask one more time. Any questions? Seeing none, all those in favor say aye.
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 Those opposed say nay. The motion prevails and the DE1 is adopted. Chair Driscoll, to your bill as amended.
Thank you, Madam Chair and members and folks. House File 1545 as amended is a bill that related to the liquor bill that this committee passed out last week. There was some question and concern as to whether a provision in that bill should be heard in another committee. And to accommodate that question, well, we're still seeking an answer to that. We thought it would be a good belt and suspenders approach to take that language that would be germane possibly in another committee and send the language to them for their consideration as we're again trying to sort out whether or not the committee does actually need to hear that information. And so that is the extent of the bill to bring the 17-year-old provision to the Committee on Labor. Madam Chair.
Members, we don't have any testifiers that have signed up from the public ahead of time, so I will just reach out to the public and ask, are there any individuals who would like to testify on HF1545?
As amended.
As amended. Any public testifiers? Seeing none, we'll go right to our own members. Members, any questions? Chair Herr?
No questions, Madam Chair. Just that for I encourage our committee a yes vote on moving this out to labor.
Thank you. Any other members like to speak? Seeing no further, Chair O'Driscoll, any final comments?
Yes, I would encourage our members as well to follow that suggestion that was given by Co-Chair Lee, her as well, and vote in the affirmative or a yes on this bill as well to be re-referred to the Labor Committee. So, Madam Chair, I will renew my motion that House File 1545, as amended, be re-referred to the Committee on Labor.
Chair O'Driscoll renews his motion on HF 1545, as amended, be referred to the Committee on Workforce, Labor, and Economic Development, Finance, and Policy, as amended. All those in favor say aye.
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 All those opposed say nay. The motion prevails. It's on its way. Our next item on the agenda is HF 2403, Commerce Policy Bill. There's no action, but we are open for public testimony. Chair O'Driscoll.
Madam Chair, I move House File 2403 before the committee to be laid over at this time. But I would like to just remind members that this is the policy bill. We will be coming up with a finance bill next week. We are separating policy from finance when we can to be able to allow it to be more manageable. And there are a number of provisions in here, and if it's all right with the chair, I would like to have nonpartisan kind of do a walkthrough with us on the different articles that are in the bill. Madam Chair.
Thank you, Chair. Should we begin with the testifiers?
Again, Madam Chair, I'm suggesting that maybe Ms. Bonhu could do a quick walkthrough for members and the public as to what's in the bill.
Ms. Bonhu, please.
Surely, Chair and members. We're looking at the DE amendment to House File 2403. The first article is financial institutions, and this includes a variety of provisions related to maximum interest rates and how real property mortgage interest rates are indexed. It includes the Uniform Special Deposits Act, written by the Uniform Law Commission, and those are special deposits in banks where the beneficiary is determined based on a contingent event in the future. Article 2 is insurance. These provisions relate to the Minnesota Insurance Guarantee Association and a requirement that an insurer provide a copy of an auto or homeowner's policy when it's requested by the insured. Article 3 is the Limited Long-Term Care Insurance Model Act by the National Association of Insurance Commissioners. Also in there are provisions related to the Minnesota Automobile Insurance Plan. Article 4 is insurance holding company systems. This is another NAIC Model Act. This makes modifications to Chapter 60D. Article 5 is modifications to the Minnesota Business Corporations Act. And this includes new sections regarding what to do when there's a defective corporate act. Article 6 is garnishment forms. So in 2024, the law directed the Attorney General to update the statutory garnishment forms related to changes in the 2024 law. So this is their update to include plain language and reference the appropriate amounts and notification requirements. Article 7 is just miscellaneous commerce provisions, and this includes allowing the Commissioner of Commerce to do data calls to entities that it licensed and how that data is classified and who it may be shared with. It updates cross-references related to gasoline and the American Society for Testing of Materials. Oh, it has provisions related to safety deposit boxes and their automatic renewal. It has a provision related to the transfer of accounts for a financial institution. It requires manufacturers, distributors, and factories to allow new motor vehicle dealers to participate in auto shows under certain circumstances. It has a provision relating to out-of-state continuing education credit for appraisers. It allows a retail gasoline station to have one storage for non-oxygenated motorsports racing fuel if it has a specific sign. It requires the Commissioner of Commerce to amend their rules to show that NASD is now FINRA and allows the Commissioner to use expedited rulemaking, and includes some repealers related to outdated fire safety codes. And that's that.
Thank you very much. Chair?
Thank you, Madam Chair, and Ms. Pompeo for the walkthrough on here. Members, some of these provisions may look familiar as things we passed out as standalones previously, and the reason that we're doing this is what has classically become known here as the Phyllis Kahn or Representative Kahn approach, which is find things and put them in as many bills as you can in case the Senate does not pass the provisions that we had before as standalones. They would be, if you will, naked on the Senate side, and we're putting them in the omnibus bill as a way to be able to track those and to get that good legislation that this committee worked on into law whenever and wherever possible. So, Madam Chair, with that, if there are no other questions, you may want to be giving your public testimony.
Thank you, Chair Driscoll. We will begin. We have one testifier sign up, Sam Smith, from Government Affairs Director, the Minnesota Department of Commerce. Welcome. Please announce your name and go on with your testifying.
Chair O'Driscoll, Chair Herr, members of the committee, my name is Sam Smith, and I'm here to testify in support of House File 2403 on behalf of the Department of Commerce. This policy omnibus bill contains many priorities for the Department of Commerce. Key items in this legislation include policy changes around mortgage indexing, which replaces a defunct benchmark index that the department uses to calculate maximum interest rates for second lien mortgage products. NAIC model law for limited long-term care. This is an NAIC model law that would allow companies to sell long-term care policies that provide coverage for a shorter period of time and with fewer benefits than traditional long-term care insurance products, thereby making this benefit significantly less expensive than traditional long-term care insurance policies. Group capital and liquidity, these are must-pass NAIC model laws that create additional metrics and transparency for the Department of Commerce to assess run-on-the-bank risk and solvency conditions for Minnesota companies. These changes must be adopted by January 1st, 2026 for Minnesota to meet NAIC accreditation standards. Almost all of their states have adopted these changes to their insurance regulations. Adding them to Minnesota statutes would ensure that we maintain strong insurance solvency requirements on par with other jurisdictions. Data calls. This proposal would allow the Department of Commerce, when issuing data calls, to protect proprietary or trade secret data by treating it as non-public. Thank you to our industry partners for collaborating with us on this language. Under APSO, many Minnesotans are unable to purchase their auto insurance through the normal market due to a variety of factors, such as driving history or their status as first-time drivers. APSO, or Minnesota's auto insurance plan, offers auto insurance coverage for these drivers. Our proposal allows for APSO to issue policies directly and without an intermediary, thereby reducing administrative costs and offering more stability than relying on a fronting company. And finally, our housekeeping and technical changes in House File 2398. We also know that the committee is close to making a final decision on policy in the Medicare supplemental space and guaranteed renewability protections for private health plans. These are not easy choices, and we hope that you consider the Department of Commerce's approach. Thank you to the committee and Chair O'Driscoll, Chair Herr, Rep. Finke, and Rep. Hewitt for carrying Department of Commerce policy bills this session. Thank you.
Thank you. Seeing no other testifiers, I will look out to the public for any testimony. Public testifiers that would like to testify? Seeing none, the HF 2403, the Commerce Policy Bill, has no action today. This is one of the bills that we will be hearing tomorrow for markup, and then we will go to members' questions tomorrow when we do the markup of the bill. Chair O'Driscoll.
Yes, thank you, Madam Chair. It is the DE, and in keeping with normal practice, we do have an opportunity for the public to provide input before the committee does do its final action, which includes markup and the final amending of the DE for consideration of passage by the committee, and that will occur tomorrow, as will the same thing happen with the bill that's coming forth, which is the Representative Stevenson bill on the cannabis omnibus policy bill.
Thank you, Chair O'Driscoll. Representative Cresha.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I'm just wondering if I could ask the department a quick question. Not about the markup. I'm just trying to get a source of something that was in here, if that's acceptable.
Director?
So, department, I'm looking on lines 17, 15, and 17, 16. I'm just wondering, on the data calls, is that a request from the legislature or a legislator about those inquiries and the targeted regulatory agency? Any insight on that? I'm just trying to get an understanding before I start my questions for tomorrow. Madam Chair,
yes, Director.
Chair, Representative Cresha, thank you for the question. This is a department policy language and would be whenever the Department of Commerce is issuing a data call, and that would be a limit on how this process would work.
Very good. Thank you, Madam Chair.
Thank you. We'll hold the rest of the member questions till tomorrow. And the public will have a chance to testify again, and the members will have a chance as we do the final markup of the Commerce Policy Bill tomorrow. So with that said, any final words, Chair O'Driscoll?
Madam Chair, just again for clarity, today was a day for the public to have input on here, and I appreciate Representative Cresha's question for clarification, as tomorrow will be the day for members to have conversation as we take our final actions on the bill. And again, that's the same protocol that we'll use for 1615, memory serves me right, which is, again, the Stevenson bill.
So thank you.
So with that, if we just want to lay it over and move to the next order of business.
Chair O'Driscoll, I understand we're not laying it over. We're just going to keep it in our packets for tomorrow's markup.
Chair, that's perfectly fine. As mentioned earlier, members could keep it because of the size of that. That's fine. We're spending more time trying to be kind and accommodating to the rules. Let's just move on.
Thank you, and you can come back and take the gavel.
Thank you.
Good morning, Representative Stevenson, and welcome to the testifiers table. You do have the DE for 1615. What we'll do is we'll have an opportunity to do a setup on this, and if you can do it, if you want to, or nonpartisan, that is your call. Secondly, again, members of the public will have an opportunity to testify on the bill. Member questions and final adoption and consideration of the DE will occur at tomorrow's meeting. Representative Stevenson, Chair Stevenson, welcome, and how would you like to proceed?
Mr. Chair, thank you. Yes, this is the cannabis bill. I think, you know, we passed a large bill in 23, smaller bill in 24, and this is yet still a smaller bill here in 25 as we kind of get more into the regular order, similar to the liquor bill where we have smaller changes. The bill contains bills that were heard in this committee on a previous date. Mr. Chair, if you'd like to have nonpartisan walk through the bill, that's fine by me. If you'd like me to describe further, that's fine by me. I defer to you.
Mr. Chair, just for transparency for everyone, since we do have another cannabis bill coming up later today, so people know what's being contemplated currently in the DE, I think it might be helpful for those present, including the committee, to get an overview of what we're looking at. So if it's okay with you, we'll defer to Ms. Pompel and ask her, or excuse me, Mr. Johnson, and see if he can help us with some of the overview. Mr. Johnson.
Mr. Chair, members, it is Ben Johnson with House Research. I will do a fairly high-level walkthrough. The House File 1615 DE is divided into three articles. The first article deals with medical cannabis provisions. These provisions come from two House files, House File 1672 and House File 1877, which this committee did hear. There are no notable changes to those provisions. They deal with a variety of technical changes related to the current medical rules, which are in, or statutes rather, which are in Chapter 152, and make some changes in Chapter 342, which will be the new medical rules, primarily related to visiting patients, to address both patients from other states, as well as addressing patients who are enrolled in the tribal medical programs. That's, again, high level, but that's Article 1, which the committee has heard those provisions. Article 2 of the DE consists of provisions from House File 1310, House File 1877, House File 1734, and Senate File 2216. I believe that's all of the provisions. I'm sorry, House File 1634 as well. Again, the committee has heard all of those provisions with the exception of the Senate provisions. Those two Senate provisions relate to the licensing for the testing facilities. There's been some concern that the accreditation process for testing facilities will not smoothly line up with the licensing procedure. And so there are two new provisions from that Senate file that allow the office to essentially grant a variance to testing facilities when the testing facility makes certain demonstrations that they are in the process of achieving accreditation. The remainder of those sections relate to changes to cannabis business licensing and operations, primarily technical changes and corrections. The final article, this is Article 3. These are the hemp business regulations. Article 3 consists of provisions that were in House File 1271 and House File 1877. As well as some provisions from House Files 1615 and 1735. As members may recall, there was discussion about the cannabis, the lower potency hemp edible wholesaler provisions, and there was significant testimony in this committee. Those various provisions have been amended fairly significantly. The testimony in committee related to the fact that the original bill reserved that wholesaler provision exclusively for current liquor wholesalers. The new version that is in the bill would open that license up to anyone to qualify, to apply for and potentially obtain. It does not limit it solely to the liquor wholesalers. There are a few other cleanup provisions in there related to adjustments to the amount of cannabinoid that beverages can contain. Again, the committee heard that bill, but there was testimony that currently a single, say, can or bottle can have up to 10 milligrams, but there's a requirement that that be identified as being two separate servings. The original bill did change that and made it one serving. That same policy is in the new bill, but there's been some language tweaks, mostly for readability and accessibility. Mr. Chair, I think that concludes a high-level walkthrough of the three articles.
Thank you, Mr. Johnson. And with that, Representative Stevenson, any questions or comments for the committee before we move to public testimony?
No, thank you, Mr. Chair.
All right. With that, our first testifier is Eric Tobel, who is the Interim Director of the Office of Cannabis Management. And as Mr. Tobel makes his way to the testifying table, the next testifier will be Glenn McElfresh. Director, welcome. If you'll identify yourself for the record and proceed with your testimony this morning.
Thank you, Chair Driscoll. Thank you to Chair Herr as well. Thank you to Representative West and Representative Stevenson, who have worked with us throughout session to bring these bills forward. I also want to thank the other members of the committee and their staff. I've had a chance to meet with most of you and talk about the policy imperatives for the office. The omnibus covers a number of key areas that are going to help the agency sort of achieve its mission over the next couple of years. Recognizing a lot of faces in the crowd and a lot of interest, I'll uncharacteristically keep my comments brief. We have four giant buckets that are relatively narrow in terms of what they're trying to accomplish. First, we're focused on cannabis licensing rollout. As noted, we create a licensing variance for testing facilities. This is designed to ensure that the market's able to launch effectively and have the kind of testing capacity we need to ensure the products are safe. We're also making targeted changes to the application process based on learned experience from the past application cycle, notably removing the onerous requirement of two signatures for corporations when we have myriad other places in the application where people attest to their ability to bind the organization. We're also focused on continuity for the medical program. We're making changes to ensure that telehealth is actually accessible for medical cannabis patients, and we're strengthening protections for those patients in areas of employment, education, and where they live. We're also focused on the hemp licensing market launch. We've identified a number of application areas where if we don't make tweaks or changes, it could delay the ability for the office to license those hemp operations that are already existing within the state of Minnesota. Finally, Mr. Johnson noted, there's a number of technical fixes and corrections that are really aimed to ensure clarity for program administration by the office. I thank all of you for your time and support on these proposals.
Thank you, Mr. Tobel. And again, members, we will take our questions and things tomorrow. So our next testifier, again, Glenn Elfresh, followed by Latila Fatia, excuse me. And then following Ms. Fajita will be Jeff Taylor. So again, if you want to start getting in queue just so we can keep things moving, that'd be most helpful for everyone. Welcome to the committee. If you'll state your name and provide your testimony.
Chair O'Driscoll and Chair Herr, committee members, thank you for allowing me to speak today on House File 1615, the Omnibus Cannabis Policy Bill. I'd like to thank Chair Stevenson and Representative Nolan West for all their work on cannabis, and Chair Stevenson in particular for authoring the bill. I'd also like to thank Interim Director Tobel and the OCM staff for their tireless work. My name is Glenn McElfresh, and I'm here today as a co-founder of Plift, a lower-potency hemp beverage company. I also own a cannabinoid emulsion company and sit on the board of the Hemp Beverage Alliance, the leading hemp beverage trade association. I've been fortunate these past few years to help hundreds of entrepreneurs launch their lower-potency hemp beverage, and the most common question I get is, where should I launch my drink? My answer is always Minnesota. Minnesota set the stage for what a hemp beverage regulatory framework should look like, thanks to the great work of many of you who helped set up this marketplace for THC beverages 2 years ago. Minnesota is a nation-leading market with steady growth, educated consumers, and a network of retailers, distributors, and manufacturers who want to see hemp beverages flourish. Launching in Minnesota is an easy recommendation for me because it's also born out of my own experience. Minnesota was Plift's first marketplace and is home to four of our great employees, Sean, Bruce, Carlin, and Bree. However, in the past 12 months, both new and well-established brands are choosing to forego launching their products in Minnesota because of a state-specific and nuanced labeling requirement that prevents brands from being compliant with both Minnesota law and law of certain other states. In Minnesota, a lower potency hemp beverage can have up to 10 milligrams of THC per can, as long as that can contains no more than two 5-milligram servings of THC per can. However, states such as Georgia and Kentucky currently do not permit multiple servings per container, and states like Rhode Island and Illinois are contemplating legislation that would not permit multiple servings per container. The only way for a brand to work around this issue is to significantly invest in packaging materials or launch in a new market without their top-selling 10-milligram drinks. Neither option is a great one. The provision to fix this situation is found in the Delete Everything Amendment on page 50, lines 50.29 through 50.30. This change permits brands who sell a 10-milligram drink to label that drink as a single 10-milligram serving with only one serving per container. This change will keep in line with the spirit of the law that caps THC beverages at no more than 10 milligrams of THC per can, while evolving with the national hemp beverage regulatory landscape. House File 1615 will also allow Minnesota businesses to export their great products to other states and allow other out-of-state businesses to throw their hat in the ring and see if their brand can compete with the best of the best here in Minnesota. Chair O'Driscoll and Chair Hurd, members of the committee and Chair Stevenson, thank you once again for the opportunity to testify today, and I'm happy to answer any questions.
Thank you for your testimony. And the next testifier, again, Leila Fatihi. And then if Mr. Taylor would like to come up and sit in the next chair, that'll help save us some time. And then our final testifier, who has signed up in advance on this bill, Patty Gelk, we'll have you also on deck here. Good morning. Welcome to the committee. And if you'll proceed by giving us your name and your testimony. Thank you for your time.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and members. Good morning. I'm Leila Fatihi, and I'm here on behalf of the Minnesota Cannabis and Drug Policy Resource Center, or MNCAN, a public benefit organization committed to advancing sustainable, equitable, and effective cannabis policy in Minnesota. We appreciate the thoughtful work in the DE amendment to House File 1615 and support many of the provisions that are included. We also thank the Office of Cannabis Management for championing many of these changes in their agency package and for the committee in including them in this bill. We do, however, want to highlight several key areas that still need attention to ensure that the final bill delivers on its promise. Please note that we did submit written testimony that you should have in your packets, fleshing out these issues in more detail. First, on medical cannabis, we strongly recommend allowing adult patients' dosing plans to be tied directly to their registry profile. This would allow adult patients to access their medicine from multiple dispensaries without having to repeat costly and unnecessary pharmacist consultations, a change that patients have been calling for years. We also urge that civil and criminal protections, which currently apply only to Minnesota medical cannabis registry patients and tribal program patients, to be extended to all visiting patients. We also recommend clarifying that healthcare facilities must accommodate all forms of legal cannabis, including hemp-derived and adult-use products for registered patients. These updates are essential to preserving safe, consistent, and non-discriminatory access to care. Second, for hemp businesses, we very much appreciate the creation of a new lower potency hemp wholesaler license, but encourage reconsideration of the $10,000 license and renewal fee for that license type, which is prohibitively high, especially for smaller hemp operators, especially in rural areas. This will help ensure that the hemp market remains legal, accessible, and economically viable for the small businesses that built it. Third, on adult use licensing, we support the inclusion of delinquency and stays of adjudication as qualifying criteria for social equity applicants. We also support key fixes that allow micro and meso licensees to purchase cannabis and hemp-derived products from other license types, remove the unnecessary two-employee and randomized delivery requirements, and allow these businesses to conduct delivery directly. These provisions help level the playing field and ensure the market reflects Minnesota's commitment to fairness and opportunity for small, locally owned businesses. Finally, as conversations continue around supply chain unification, we urge you to ensure that any combination licensing changes also preserve delivery, self-transport, and medical market access for micro and meso licensees. It's critical that patients are not pitted against small businesses and that Minnesota's cannabis market evolves with the equity and sustainability at its core. This bill represents meaningful progress, and with a few final refinements, it can serve as a strong foundation for a cannabis system that truly works for patients, consumers, and communities across the state. Thank you for your time and continued leadership.
Thank you for your testimony. Mr. Taylor, followed by, again, Patty Gilk, if you would come up and be available. Good morning and welcome to the committee. If you'll state your name for the record and proceed with your testimony.
Good morning. My name is Jeff Taylor. I'm a local manufacturer here in town. I just wanted to speak briefly on two subjects. One is CBD, I know there's some things that are coming down the pipeline with CBD and changing of the milligrams that you can have. I guess I'm a little bit unsure if we know what CBD is. I don't think everybody understands what CBD is. CBD actually does not get you high. And so I don't even know why we have any limits on CBD at all. Matter of fact, we always talk about if a child gets a hold of it, a child could get a hold of that and eat the whole jar and they might get sick from the sugar, but not the CBD, and they're not going to get high. Maybe they get a little tired, but it's just, I think we're putting a lot onto enforcement and Department of Cannabis when they're out there worrying about these things, and they already have enough on their plate. They're dealt a hand that's a tough job, and so my hat's off to what they are doing, but I don't think we need extra regulations, and I don't know, again, I don't know why we're regulating CBD at all. It's like taking water, okay? Secondly, I know that there's a lot of discussions that's going to come up today with medical. We had a meeting a couple weeks ago about the medical, and I think some of us out here are willing to help. We do appreciate some of the things that medical has done, and medical has been needed over the last few years. But we're also willing to sell medical products on our shelves also. And I know it's going to come up with, you know, how much they get to grow and some of the things that they want. We just want to play a fair playing field.
Yeah, Mr. Taylor, you are exactly correct. That is the next bill, and so I would just ask you to, you know, keep your comments to the DE amendment. And I think we've got the gist of what you're looking
That's
at.
That's all I have to say. Thank you.
Thank you. Yes, appreciate it, Mr. Taylor. Representative Stevenson, did you want to make any comment about CBD or anything that the testifier talked about today?
No, I don't have any comments.
Okay, thank you. Ms. Gilp, welcome to the committee. If you'll state your name for the record and proceed with your testimony.
Thank you. Thank you, Representative Stevenson. Thank you all for helping with the bill, House File 1615. My name is Patty Gilk. I am a registered nurse and the founder of Just Natural CBD Wellness. 7 years ago, I had three kids in college, John, Emily, and Sam. That's where Just came from. At that time, I started going through menopause. I talked to my doctors and told them I wanted to research the science behind CBD products for a natural solution for my symptoms. Then in late 2018, there were over 3,000 CBD brands. And after extensive research, I chose some brands that were reputable, and I started taking CBD every day. And not only was it calming me right away, it literally changed my life. And it's at this point that I became so passionate about sharing this knowledge with everyone I knew that my family encouraged me to open a business in our community to educate and provide a safe place to purchase the highest quality CBD products. Now, 6 years later, we have grown to three locations, Excelsior, Eden Prairie, and Victoria. Not only do we educate the community, we are members of three local chambers, donate to many local causes, and help thousands of people. In 2023, we were awarded Business of the Year by the Excelsior Lake Minnetonka Chamber of Commerce. Over the years, there have been many bills, this one included, written with ongoing changes. First, positive laws for consumer safety were put into place. This helped me to make business decisions, like opening new locations, but then attempting to take away legal products that I have been carrying in my stores. The majority of the products that Just Naturals offers are not intoxicating, and we do not sell any smokable products. Some of the proposed changes in the bills would significantly reduce the number of products we can offer our customers or make them so costly we couldn't be competitive. Many of my customers are Minnesota seniors, and a lot of them do not want to be forced to go into a recreational dispensary for their CBD products. If businesses like Just go away, consumers will go online and buy unvetted products. There are three items that I would like to address in 1615. I appreciate all the work that everyone's done on the bill this far, and I don't know that it's enough to keep my doors open in our community. First issue is the limits on non-intoxicating cannabinoids, which everyone has talked about already. The changes in the bill are restricting the business, my business, in ways that are not reasonable. Putting in practical limits on non-intoxicating hemp products for me, but not a cannabis retailer, is not fair. And all of the file numbers, I sent a PDF, so you'll have all of that. Issue number two, allow low-dose hemp retailers to purchase Minnesota-compliant products from reputable out-of-state companies without paying $10,000 for a wholesale license, which is an unreasonable amount for a small business. I've been doing this legally for 6 years, and I understand that we want things safe, but if we register the out-of-state brands, that should be sufficient. My business model is vetting the best products in the country all in one place. We adhere to the Whole Foods banned ingredients list to choose our brands. There are many companies that use dyes and chemical preservatives, which I will not carry. I have Minnesota brands as well as very popular and highly reputable out-of-state brands. Minnesotans need to have in-store access to the best products on the market today, regardless of manufacturing location. It took years to build relationships with my out-of-state manufacturers. And number three, non-intoxicating products like CBD should be on a shelf, not locked behind a case or locked behind the register like intoxicating products. You would have a store with a register and everything behind it. So that is a simple fix with one word in the bill. There's room for everyone in this cannabis space. Please don't forget about small businesses, and the huge demographic of Minnesotans who just want low-potency hemp products and are so grateful.
Ms. Gilk, I am going to ask you to wrap in the next about 30 seconds or so, if you would, please.
Thank you. So I'm happy to meet with anyone if you have any questions, and there'll be a PDF posted, like I said.
Thank you. Is there anyone else? That takes exhausts the list of testifiers who signed up in advance. Is there anyone from one from the public today who would like to testify on the matter before the committee, House File, or excuse me, DE1 on House File 1615? Anyone from the public wishing to testify on 1615, the DE1 amendment? If you'll make your way to the testifying table, we'll give you about 45 seconds or so to share your thoughts this morning. And again, this is the Cannabis Omnibus Policy Bill for the Commerce Committee in the House. Good morning, sir. Welcome to the committee. For the state
Good morning. Chairman. Thank you for having me, and I'll make it quick. My name is Ben Lipkin, founder of North Star Hemp, founded in 2019. Carpe Diem CBD, one of two certified organic farms, soil farms in the state. We currently manufacture and wholesale to over 3,000 physicians in state and out of state. Just like Patty said, if these limits to oral CBD is taken away, our patients will not be going to dispensaries to get this. They will be buying reputable brands offline, and all the revenue coming to small businesses will be wiped out. Second that, our company just built out the first ever accredited CE program for Northwestern Health Sciences and educated over 400 chiropractors. There is nothing unsafe about CBD. As you can tell, I'm very, very passionate about this. I've been fighting this since 2013. There's absolutely no reason for non-intoxicating CBD that binds your endocannabinoid system to get it back into balance to be a part of a cannabis bill. Thank you very much.
Yes, Mr. Lipkin, I also see you're on the list to testify on 2426 as well. Is there anyone else who would like to testify before the committee on the DE Amendment 1615? Right, Representative Stevenson, any final comments before we move on?
No, Mr. Chair, I see there's a lot of people who want to spend the next bill, so I'll save our discussion for tomorrow.
Much appreciated. And members, if you would take and file this in your packet as well, the DE for tomorrow, as we did with the Commerce Policy Omnibus Bill, that would be very helpful. As Representative West, the bill author for the next bill, makes his way to the testifying table, again, we have about 62 minutes. We have 20 testifiers who have signed up, plus there are others out in the hallway who, or not because of safety capacity and issues with the room, allowed to be able to come in. We would like to try to get to as many people as we can. As we go through, again, I'm going to make sure that on either side of Representative West, we have a testifier or the next testifier. We'll also have the vacant chair so that we can save time in rotating and moving people forward. Again, I want to just remind you that your time is going to be limited to 2 minutes because of the number of testifiers. We will not be taking any actions on this bill this morning. This is for the contemplation of the committee for the markup of the cannabis omnibus policy bill tomorrow. So with that, if someone has said the same thing that you have, the committee has a very good memory, and there's been a lot of submitted testimony over the things over the last several weeks. To repeat something that the committee already knows does not give someone who has new testimony in front of the committee the opportunity to be able to testify. And again, I will be enforcing the two-minute rule. And our first testifier this morning is Tiffany Newburn Johnson. Tiffany, Newbern Johnson.
Can I not present the bill first, Mr. Chair?
Again, I'm just wanting to make sure that the testifiers are here. We'll get it before the committee. Ms. Newbern Johnson?
This is Kim. Well,
Kim Johnson
was going to.
Okay, so you've got some testifiers?
Yes.
Okay. All right. Sorry, Representative West. With that, I will move House File 2426 before the committee to be laid over.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. All right. So, thank you, members of the committee, for your interest in this bill, and thank you for everybody coming to talk about it. Well, am I good to go?
I just wanted to know if you wanted to take the A1 amendment at this time.
We can take up the A1 amendment.
All right. Representative West has an A1 amendment to House File 2426. All those in favor of the A1 amendment to get the bill in the form the author wishes, signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Those opposed, the motion prevails. Now, Representative West, we are ready for your testifiers. And again, if I could ask for Tiffany Newbern Johnson and for Amber Shimpach to be able to kind of be in queue here so we keep things moving so that we can hear from as many people as possible here this morning. Representative West, go.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. So the A1 amendment reflects some changes based on input we got on the bill in a meeting with many stakeholders. This bill is a work in progress, and it addresses a critical issue in Minnesota's hopefully imminent cannabis market. We'll see. Lord willing. We know the rollout has not gone particularly smooth, but the way the current law is written places incredibly arduous burdens on medical cannabis businesses going forward. And a big issue with that is everybody supports, even the vast majority of people who voted against the bill to legalize, support our existing cannabis medical market. And the regulations that exist were, I would say, well-intended. Their goal was to ensure that the medical market is continued to be served. But one issue is if there is no viable medical cannabis market, because these regulations make it impossible, we're going to have trouble maintaining access to medications of our medical patients. And that is something nobody wants. So just to set the table on what this amendment does and the issues that this bill addresses. So the amendment lowers the allowed canopy for medical cannabis companies from 90,000 to 60,000. The reason it was moved up to 90,000 is kind of in response to the ratio, which requires a 2-square-foot canopy sold of medical cannabis products to every 1 square foot sold for adult use cannabis products, which is a very complicated formula to run, a very arduous thing to comply with. Just for example, if you look at the cannabis medical rules, on page 64.9 to 64.17 of the draft rules that hopefully will be adopted soon, except for this portion, they have to log each piece of equipment, who was using it, what product it touched, and then that has to be readily available for the department at any time at their request. Each piece of equipment, even if that piece of equipment deals with identical products. So say they have a cannabis medical flower that they'd like to sell for adult use and for medical purposes, even if it's an identical product, it's still required to literally not even touch the same equipment. And that is one of the biggest issues. So that results in a divided supply chain. The Office of Cannabis Management's original position was a unified supply chain because it makes economic and business sense. There's no reason to divide things that don't need to be divided. If the products need to be segregated, they will be segregated. If they don't need to, we should allow the businesses to operate. Now, that's a very complicated change, but I hope it's something we can address into the future. And we also have to worry about the shortage we are imminently coming to. Every cannabis market that has opened across the country has started with a significant shortage. Minnesota does not have even close to the canopy to assist in a rollout. We have 1,800 micro businesses that have applied for a license, and that license is uncapped. So 1,800 people who are going to try and start up a business and not even have a product to sell for the most case. The only products available presently are from the medical companies and from the tribal governments. That could help if the medical companies were allowed to participate fully, or more than this ratio allows. But it's not going to be enough, and we're going to see a very, very high attrition rate of these new businesses. And if the goal of the bill and the goal of legalization was to assist those who are harmed by cannabis prohibition, having them start businesses that have little chance of success is not the right way to do it. This amendment also puts a few more guardrails around the commitment to maintain the medical market. That was the purpose of the ratio. And this bill removes that ratio. We don't want then suddenly to desert the medical market. Neither medical company has asked or wants to desert the medical market. They were created to serve the medical market. And the reason there are only two medical cannabis companies operating currently is because that is in law, in the medical cannabis law in Minnesota, only allowed two companies to operate. That, I would say, is a huge mistake, and also is a reason which the interim director of OCM has repeatedly laid out, that our rollout is having some trouble on supply, whereas other states that have gone to legalization have robust cannabis, medical cannabis markets that can help with supply, particularly early in launch. We do not because of our stringent laws, and it appears those mistakes of the past are persisting into the future. So the goal here is to relieve some of that burden and ensure that the medical companies can still operate in a viable way so that we can maintain a medical market for the patients who need it. And there are many testifiers in this room that I know will speak against this bill, and I think this amendment shows you're actually being heard, whereas I know that has been a difficulty in the past for many of you in this room who are going to testify on this bill. And this is not the end of the road. This bill is being laid over. This bill will continue to be worked on, and I invite you, it's actually, you're only learning if you're talking to people who disagree with you. So I do invite people who disagree with me to talk, share with what they think should be changed in the bill, and we will work to get something that can improve the state of the medical cannabis, the potential medical cannabis market with adult use, and allow a fair playing field for everyone to participate. That is the goal of the bill, and I can now turn it over to my testifier.
Yeah, Representative West, thank you. And again, I want to stress for people that one of the areas that was of extreme controversy that sparked a lot of testimony was in the DE amendment, moving from 90,000 down to 60,000. The bill now has a 60,000 limit in here versus a 90,000. So you may want to take that into consideration for your testimony, because if you come up and say, we want it at 60, well, it's already now 60 because we have adopted the amendment on that to, again, get the opportunity to have more people heard this morning. So with that, Representative West, we'll go to your first testifier. He'll state your name for the record and give us about a two-minute overview, and we'll continue on. Thank you.
Thank you. My name is Kim Kelsey. I'd like to thank, first of all, Co-Chair O'Driscoll, Co-Chair Herr, and members. It's been a while since I've done this. I did it 11 years ago, started out, but now I've had a break, so sorry. My name is Kim Kelsey. I'm a Minnesota mom and a cannabis patient advocate, here to speak in support of HF 2426 on behalf of my son, Alec. Son Alec, and thousands of patients like him who rely on medical cannabis to survive and thrive. Thank you for this opportunity. I commend the Minnesota legislature for legalizing adult use cannabis. It marked a major step forward in access to this remarkable plant, but today I'm speaking out because the victory isn't quite complete. Without HF 2426, my son and countless other Minnesota patients stand to lose access to the medicine that has sustained them for nearly a decade. Alec was only 4 when encephalitis nearly took his life. One morning, we found him unconscious and not breathing. The paramedics had to intubate him on our kitchen floor before airlifting him to the University of Chicago Hospital. He spent 18 days in a coma, fighting to survive. When he finally woke, the battle wasn't over. Alec had to relearn how to walk, talk, and even swallow through intensive therapies. His brain had suffered bilateral brain damage, leaving him with uncontrolled, life-threatening seizures. 9 years ago, everything changed. At 1201 on July 1st, 2015, I stood alongside other parents and patients, Patrick, right there, in Minneapolis as Alec became Minnesota's first medical cannabis patient. He started taking a CBD oil that day, and before long, we saw a profound shift. The relentless around-the-clock subclinical seizure activity that had silently paralyzed his brain function began to ease. With that relief, we came something extraordinary: improved processing, clarity, and connection. Seizures were less in severity and in length. There were no side effects, just the calming of the storm in his brain. His thinking became clearer, his joy returned. That's the power of this medicine. It didn't just make Alec's life better, it made it possible. I fought for that moment along the seizure moms and the other as we determined ourselves the big daddy and the mommy lobby. Back in 2014, we weren't just advocating for our own kids, we were fighting for all access for Minnesotans. For the past 9 years, Minnesota Medical Cannabis Program has delivered real relief, thanks in a large part to providers like Vireo Health, who invested early in cultivation, facilities, manufacturing, retail locations, and a professional workforce, all to ensure that the patients would receive safe, high-quality medicine. Their commitment didn't just support patients like Alec. It laid the groundwork for the robust medical program we have today and helped give way to the adult use legalization. Without Vireo's leadership and willingness to act when it mattered most, we wouldn't even be having this conversation. I'm reminded of the impact that as I visit Green Goods to pick up Alec's medicine, when my name is called, this has happened on a few occasions, people have come up to me and quietly said, "Oh my gosh, you're Alec's mom. You saved my life." Or, "You're helping me." It's very emotional. As adult use sales approach, I'm deeply concerned that the current framework doesn't ensure continued access for patients like Alec. If production or distribution falters, the very people in this program that it was created to serve could be left behind. That's why HF 2426 is critical. It gives trusted operators like Vireo the certainty with capacity they need to expand, hire, and plan for the future without compromising their ability to care for the existing patients. It ensures continuity of care while laying a stable foundation for adult use success. It's not about just keeping medicine on shelves, it's about protecting lives. I urge you to support HF 2426 for Alec, for every patient who relies on this program, and for the companies that took a chance when it mattered most. Thank you. If you have any questions.
Thank you for your time. And you did a great job this morning.
Thank you.
Representative West, to your next testifier. If you go ahead and state your name for the record and proceed with your testimony.
Thank you very much, Chair, members of the committee. My name is Patrick McClellan. I was part of the group that fought for the legalization of medical cannabis with Kim, Representative Moline, and Senator Dibble over 10 years ago. We came to the Capitol because we wanted access to legal and safe medical cannabis medications that people could afford, and we're still waiting. I support House File 2426 because today the medical cannabis program is on life support. The mistakes of the past created a medical cannabis market that couldn't function, creating a lack of customer choice and high prices. We need to support the medical cannabis manufacturers by easing canopy size, removing the canopy ratio, and unifying the supply chain. Medical cannabis manufacturers must be able to operate in an efficient and cost-effective way. It's going to be the smaller businesses that will drive innovation and lower prices. Without making changes to the medical cannabis market, it will collapse. Letting the program collapse means that patients will stop seeking medical advice from their doctors and pharmacists. We will lose our legal protections for employment, housing, and hospitals, and these are important to all of us. Medical cannabis users are the most vulnerable consumers of these products. Patients need access to a medically supervised program because we should not get medical advice from a dispensary. I believe there's still time to create a viable medical cannabis market, and we can all make compromises to get there. The cannabis industry and the legislature need to stand up for patients because we were the reason it was legalized in the first place. Thank you very much for hearing my testimony.
Thank you, sir. And with that, we are going to move to testimony, our first public testimony. And again, we have a list that is containing about 20 people at this point and others wishing to testify. Making her way to the testifying table right now, Ms. Newburn-Johnson. And then if Ms. Shipuck, very good, getting on the other side. And our next two testifiers will be Diana Tasted-Dahmer, and followed by Kimberly Kelsey. So if you will make your way to the front of the room. Oh, I'm sorry. Yes. That's out of order. Tim Gordon will be our next testifier at that. Ms. Newburn-Johnson, identify yourself for the record and proceed with your testimony. Good morning.
Good morning. Tiffany Newburn-Johnson on behalf of Leafline Labs Green Thumb Industries. Good morning, committee co-chairs O'Driscoll and Herr and members of the committee. Thank you for the opportunity to speak today in strong support of HF2426, and thank you to Representative West for advancing this important conversation about the future of Minnesota's medical cannabis program. My name is Tiffany Newburn-Johnson again, and I am the Director of Government Affairs at Leafline Labs Green Thumb Industries. I'm here today on behalf of the 55,000 medical cannabis patients we serve each year, many of whom are living with serious, chronic, or life-limiting conditions who rely on a stable, regulated medical cannabis supply chain to manage their health. Leafline has been part of Minnesota's medical cannabis program since 2015. We employ more than 280 Minnesotans in union-represented jobs, and we've made long-term investments in local production and retail operations. Our commitment to the state's program is deep and ongoing, and that's why we're sounding the alarm about its current fragility. Right now, Minnesota's medical cannabis program is at risk. As we move towards the launch of the adult use market, the medical program faces growing structural and economic pressures that will undermine patient access if not changed. We've seen in other states that without policy adjustments, medical cannabis programs will erode, leaving patients with fewer options, higher prices, and sometimes no access at all. In states like New York, supply restrictions on existing operators, despite the intention, have directly destabilized the medical program, reducing patient access and undermined overall adult use and medical market stability. These restrictions also led to massive inversion of product from out of state and rampant illicit sales that continue to plague the state more than 4 years after the passage of the law legalizing adult use. Minnesota still has an opportunity to learn from these experiences and chart a smarter course. HF2426 removes an artificial constraint that currently makes it nearly impossible for medical cannabis operators to plan or operate sustainably or even serve new dispensaries that will inevitably need product to stock their shelves. It's important to note that this bill does not, however, expand the maximum adult use medical canopy, which is already a total of...
Going to ask you to begin to start wrapping.
Yes, which is also a total of 90,000 square feet under current state law. Our goal is to merely allow a medical cannabis operator to maintain a viable presence in both our markets. We are grateful to Representative West for his ongoing engagement with stakeholders and his commitment to crafting a bill that supports patients while addressing the needs and concerns of a diverse and evolving industry. We look forward to continuing to discuss these important issues.
I have to enforce the rule. We got a lot of testifiers on this. Thank you for the thanks of the committee. Ms. Shep, if you will go ahead. And Diana Tasted-Dahmer, if you would come into queue. And then our next two testifiers will be via Zoom, Tim Gordon and Angela Dawson. If you were listening, you will be up shortly here as well. Ms. Shepa, if you'd state your name for the record and proceed with your testimony.
Thank you, Co-Chair O'Driscoll, Co-Chair Herr, members of the committee.
If you just pull the microphone just a little closer. There you go. Thank you.
My name is Amber Shimpa, and I'm the CEO of Urio Health of Minnesota, one of the state's original medical cannabis licensees here. And thank you for having us here. This bill, we believe, safeguards patients, sustains workers, and sets the stage for a thriving cannabis market in our state. Without this bill, Minnesota's medical cannabis program and patients are at risk. I was with Patrick and Kim on July 1st of 2015 when we served the first medical patients in the state. It's been an honor to continue to lead a team dedicated to the compassionate care here in the state. And the bill is not just about plants and canopy. It truly is about people. It's people, it's patients, it's new businesses wanting to join, and we fully lean into and support all of that.
We serve over 55,000 patients annually here, and for most of those, medical cannabis is that lifeline to the debilitating symptoms. It enables them to have a fulfiller and healthier life. The bill guarantees that businesses like ours and future MedCombo businesses can maintain patient access while bridging the gap between the medical reliability and adult use readiness. And without this bill, operators like Vireo, trusted partners in the state for over a decade, will not be able to invest or expand under this strain. And you've heard this from others, so I won't reiterate some of this. I do want to say our impact does extend beyond patients as well. We employ over 200 Minnesotans in stable, well-paying jobs, upheld by a collective bargaining agreement with the UFCW Local 1189. And plan to hire additional employees as part of the adult use expansion. But without the changes noted here today, those jobs could vanish before they start. The benefits of this bill are clear. Patients gain certainty that their medicine will remain viable. Operators like Vireo can confidently operate its business, hire more Minnesotans, and our state's cannabis economy gains more stability. Minnesotans deserve a cannabis industry built on choice, safety, and common sense, one that leverages proven infrastructure here. And we believe that House File 2426 does deliver that vision. I want to thank Representative West for introducing this patient-focused bill and engaging with all of us stakeholders to address the long-term continuity of patient access. Thank you for your consideration. Happy to answer any questions.
Thank you for your time. Our next testifier, Diana Tasted Damer, and then again via Zoom, Tim Gordon and Angela Dawson will be our next testifiers. Good morning and welcome to the committee. If you'll state your name for the record and proceed with your testimony.
Yeah, hello. My name is Diana Tasted Damer. Thank you, Chair O'Driscoll.
We just ask you to pull the microphone just a little closer.
Sorry. Yep. And thank you, Chair O'Driscoll and her. My name is Diana Tasted Damer, and I'm the Secretary Treasurer for the United Food and Commercial Workers Local 1189. We currently represent over 200 workers in the state of Minnesota in the cannabis industry, from Hermantown down to Rochester, Moorhead to Woodbury, and every place in between. And I am here today to testify in support of House File 2426. There are two main points that I would like to cover this morning. The first is unifying the supply chain. Currently, enforcing a system of separate adult use and medical cannabis plants at cultivation is likely to lead to an oversupply in the medical program and shortages in the adult use program. These inefficiencies will have a negative impact on our members. We have seen firsthand how medical markets decline after adult use is implemented. We also represent over 10,000 cannabis workers across the country, so we've seen it in other states. Mandating a dual supply chain where licenses are forced to operate a majority of their business in a shrinking market will impose uncertainty on the job security of current medical cannabis license employees who are members. Those members have come to depend on their cannabis careers for their livelihood, and in an inefficient market where current licenses are forced to scale down their current operations or limit their already planned and invested growth will have a direct blow to our members and their families. The second point that I would like to highlight is the transportation piece in this bill. We currently represent the transportation drivers at GTI, and this bill also allows for medical cannabis combination business license to transport and deliver medical cannabis.
About 20 seconds left, ma'am.
Great. Cannabis products along with adult use products. And so we want to ensure that our members don't lose their jobs. So let's fix this. Thank you.
Thank you for your testimony. Mr. Gordon was going to testify via Zoom. He is no longer on Zoom. We'll keep an eye and see if he comes back, but we'll rotate to our next testifier who is also on Zoom, Angela Dawson. Ms. Dawson, if you would identify yourself for the record. Again, testimony to 2 minutes or less, if you would, please, before the committee. Welcome. State your name before you begin your testimony.
Thank you. Thank you, Gerald Driscoll. My name is Angela Dawson. Good morning, members of the committee. Thank you for the opportunity to provide testimony on HF 2426. My name, again, is Angela Dawson. I'm a Minnesota farmer. I'm also a pre-approved microbusiness license applicant. I'm here today to speak about critical considerations for you to ponder in the laying over of this bill, since we already know it's going to be laid over. I just feel like I'm not going to repeat everything that folks have said. I just want to bring out a few key points. Now, the thing about the bill that I think is important for us to consider is that, of course, the unification of supply chain. As a micro business, I want to be able to serve my community with the quality medical cannabis products and services, and I think unifying the supply chain will help with that. Selling medical cannabis products to other cannabis business, that aspect of the bill is also really important and helpful for my business, but I'll skip to the areas that I have concerns about because I want there to be serious consideration, especially for medical businesses, micro businesses that want to serve the medical community. I appreciate everyone's effort to ensure a safe and equitable market in Minnesota, but I am here still a year after we've been having this conversation, still waiting to cultivate, still waiting to serve my community, still waiting to operate. And I appreciate that we've been able to put a bill together for this company to be able to operate and extend benefits to medical combo businesses. But I also want to say that whatever is being extended to these med combo businesses should be extended to micro businesses with medical endorsements. For example, social equity micro businesses should not have to take on the expense of self-transport if MedCombo businesses can do that too. My last issue is that being able to operate in more than one location. So if you could just consider micro businesses that also want to serve this community in this conversation, and don't forget about those of us who are still waiting to operate. Thank you.
Thank you for your testimony and your patience with us this morning. The next testifier is Josh Wilkins-Simon, followed by Clement Dabney. And so again, if you would take your positions on either side of Representative West at the testifying table, and then followed by that will be Ben Lipkin. So again, if you want to make your way to the front, and as a chair is available, we'll have you slot in. Mr. Wilkins-Simon, if you'll identify yourself for the record and proceed with your testimony this morning, sir.
Yeah, thank you so much, Co-Chair Driscoll, Co-Chair Herr, members of the Commerce Committee. Really appreciate the opportunity to testify today on this important matter. I also, I guess I'll start. My name is Josh Wilkins-Simon. I own Legacy Glassworks, and I own Legacy Cannabis, and I own and operate the Legacy Cup Cannabis Festival. I do want to start by thanking Representative West for holding a stakeholder meeting with a bunch of social equity applicants, small businesses, the medical companies. Much appreciated. I am speaking today in opposition to HF 2426. I'll try to keep my comments brief. I know there's a lot of folks testifying. So 2 years ago, HF 100, the law that legalized adult use cannabis, was working its way through almost every single committee in the House and the Senate. This body had the opportunity to look back at 22 other states that have legalized cannabis and learn the lessons. One of the lessons that they learned was, how can we support small business, and how can we ensure that the biggest multi-state operators, biggest businesses, do not have an inherent market advantage? One of the ways that they did this was being very careful on what license types are vertically integrated, those license types being the smallest, the micro and the meso license types. This bill, as amended, would create actually a super license that is uncapped, the dual med combo license, and that just gives an inherent unfair advantage to the small businesses in Minnesota. For context, a cultivation license has 30,000 square feet of canopy. That is not vertically integrated. A retail license, 5 dispensaries, not vertically integrated. This bill, as amended, would provide canopy for the dual combo license at almost double the square feet of a non-vertically integrated cultivation license.
About 20 seconds, sir.
Almost double the square feet of, or sorry, double the number of stores as a retail license. The last thing I want to say is that 3,529 businesses have applied for a license type. They looked at all the licenses. I want to do cultivation. I want to do a micro without knowing that there was the potential to have a super license that they would have all surely applied for. I look forward to working with members of this committee, Representative West, because I think that we do need to support our medical company and medical community as well. Thank you for your time.
Thank you. And Mr. Dabney, we're going to go to you in just a second. Our next testifier after Mr. Lipkin is going to be Brock Friesen. So if you want to make your way to the front of the room, we'll cue you in as well. Good morning and welcome. State your name for the record and proceed with your testimony.
Good morning, Chair Odisco and members of the committee. My name is Dr. Clement Dabney. I'm a Bloomington resident, a social equity microbusiness license applicant, owner of Dr. Dabs, an edible manufacturing company, and a contributing columnist for the Minnesota Star Tribune on cannabis issues. I'm here today to strongly oppose HF 2426. This bill would dramatically reshape Minnesota's emerging cannabis marketplace, stacking the deck against small businesses like mine before we've even had the chance to compete. When you passed HF 100, it was a thoughtful framework that allowed small and mid-sized operators to participate through limited vertical integration while keeping larger license types in check. This bill didn't come from the grassroots or small businesses. It's being pushed by the two biggest medical cannabis companies in Minnesota, GTI and Vireo, both massive out-of-state corporations, and not coincidentally, executives from GTI have poured over $125,000 into Minnesota politics in the past year, donating to both Democrats and Republicans, to caucuses and individual lawmakers alike. This is not bipartisanship. That's influenced spending. This idea that we need a massive increase in medical cannabis size is not rooted in public need. Or getting rid of this cap is not rooted in public need. It's a ploy by the corporate cannabis to manipulate policy in their own interest. The math on supply and demand does not support this bill. As Representative West talked about before, there's about 1,800 microbusinesses that applied. The sordid talking point is not rooted in fact. Even if they were to get 45 grams per square foot, which is really conservative estimate on yield, that would be over 4 million pounds of cannabis produced just by the micro cannabis license types. That doesn't include the tribes. That doesn't include meso, cultivator, or these combo licenses. So meanwhile, thousands of Minnesotans like me have invested our savings, our time, and our dreams based on the license structure you gave us in HF 100. We're being told that there'll be a fair shot, but now we're watching the rules change mid-game before the market has even opened. HF 2426 not only undermines equity and competition, it violates the intent of Statute 342.02, which directs the Office of Cannabis Management to promote a craft cannabis industry. This bill ensures that craft cannabis will never take root in Minnesota. I urge you to protect the structure you guys built, protect the Minnesotans who followed the rules, and say no to corporate cannabis rewrites of our cannabis laws, and vote no on HF 2426. Thank you.
Thank you, Doctor, for your testimony. Mr. Lipkin, followed by Brock Friesen, and then Nathan Young will be the next in queue. Mr. Lipkin, if you identify yourself again for
thank
the record,
you again. Ben Lipkin, owner of North Star Hemp Brands, Carpe Diem, CBD, and You Betcha Cannabis. By the way, or certified organic, we've all heard everything's done by the book on the medical side. Well, guess what? It's on the small business side, too. We wouldn't be allowed to supply all the NFL, NHL, and MLB doctors with CBD if they didn't trust us that we did right things. All of our products are gluten-free, no sugar, and so on. But I really want to get to, who are we as Minnesotans? We take care of ourselves. We take care of our small businesses. If this bill is amended and passed, I truly believe 90% of the micro businesses will be out of business within 1 year. They're going to suffocate the small businesses. So it's our choice. Something I heard from GTI and Vireo is we need this to pass to pay our employees. Aren't these two companies paying their employees already today without an issue? This is a big market grab, and when the five other massive companies come in, there won't be craft cannabis like Representative Stevenson passed a couple years ago. That's my piece. Keep my emotion at bay. I appreciate you all, and I vote no to pass this amendment. Thank you.
Thank you, sir. Appreciate your testimony today. Mr. Friesen, and then Mr. Young. All right. And then it will be Marcus Harkus after that. Phil, go ahead and identify yourself for the record and proceed with your testimony.
Hello, everybody. My name is Brock Friesen. I'm the Director of Sales and Education at Carpe Diem CBD. Thank you, everybody, for allowing me to come up here today and testify. I truly appreciate your guys' time. I'm here to oppose the bill HF 2426. The Office of Cannabis Management must promote a craft industry cannabis for the cannabis flower and cannabis products, and that's what we'd like to keep doing here today. I'm here to express that these bills will threaten Minnesota small businesses, local jobs, and economic growth while also limiting the access of effective CBD products that can improve the quality of life for some people. If large multi-state operators dominate the cannabis industry, profits will flow out of Minnesota, hurting local entrepreneurs and reducing the product diversity for consumers here in the state. Something that small businesses can offer that larger ones can't, smaller businesses can offer personalized customer service, providing tailored product recommendations that massive markets can't match. Small businesses are also able to have the agility and innovation, so local companies can quickly respond to customer needs, offering new formulations like high-dose CBD products, functional mushroom blends, along with other organic options. Commitment to quality and transparency is big as well for small businesses. Prioritizing third-party testing, organic farming, and high-quality products, where MSOs will be cutting costs at expenses for profits more than quality. CBD has been shown to be very effective and safe at high doses. Studies have shown and demonstrated tolerability at doses up to 6,000 milligrams daily. And yes, I have two research articles to back that up. CBD is non-intoxicating, nor does it impair cognition or physical functions. Even medicinal doses as far as 1,500 milligrams have been shown safe to drive. Again, thank you guys, everybody, for your time. Really want to keep small businesses here and keep the money profiting in Minnesota.
Thank you, Mr. Friesen. Nathan Young, second and final call. Nathan Young. Then Marcus Harkus, if you would go ahead and take the testifying table, followed by Sean Tataliat. Thank you, sir. And with that, welcome to the committee. If you'd state your name for the record and proceed with your testimony.
Good morning, Chair Ojisco and members of the committee. My name is Marcus Harkus. I'm from North Minneapolis, and I'm a social equity retail license applicant. I'm here to strongly oppose HF 2426. Minnesota legalized adult-use cannabis in 2023 with the goal of creating an equitable, craft-focused industry that prioritizes small businesses and social equity applicants. This bill undermines that vision by granting disproportionate power to the two multi-state operators that already dominate Minnesota's medical cannabis market after enjoying a duopoly for the past decade. This bill would allow these MSOs to expand their cultivation capacity to 60,000 square feet, which is double the canopy size, and they already have an unfair advantage, competitive advantage with 8 retail stores, which is nearly double the retail footprint allowed for other license types. Such a super license would make it nearly impossible for small businesses and local entrepreneurs to compete. It's called economies of scale. The original licensing framework was designed to limit vertical integration and to promote fairness. Thousands of entrepreneurs like me have invested resources based on this structure. But HF 2426 would consolidate power in the hands of these large corporations, violating Minnesota Statute 342.02, which mandates the OCM promotes a craft cannabis industry. If passed, HF 2426 would dismantle the equitable market that we fought for years, replacing it with a big marijuana model that prioritizes profits of MSOs over opportunities for Minnesotans. So I urge you to please reject this bill and protect the craft cannabis industry promised to our state. Thank you for your support.
Thank you for your testimony, Mr. Harkus. Our next testifier is here, and our following testifier from that will be Richard Brahma, who is available on Zoom. And then if Chris Wenzel is here, if he could assume one of the positions or the chairs next to Representative West, that would be helpful as well. Good morning. Thank you for your patience. Welcome. If you'll state your name for the record and proceed with your testimony.
Thank you, Chair and committee members. I'm Sean Tatro. I represent Kind Bud Inc., and I oppose HF 2426. The Minnesota cannabis industry was sold to the public as a craft industry for Minnesota entrepreneurs. The legislature also touted a social equity round of licensing created to offer early mover advantages for those harmed by cannabis prohibition. This amendment is not consistent with a craft market. It takes away any hope of social equity early mover advantage and doesn't benefit those harmed by prohibition. In fact, MSOs were the only cannabis businesses legally allowed to operate while prohibition was still harming many Minnesotans. Now these MSOs are asking to participate in the adult use market, but not on a level playing field. They, like the tribes, are requesting huge built-in advantages over everyone else. Two of the six medical combo applicants already operate large cultivation facilities with retail locations spread around the Twin Cities. This is a luxury no one else enjoys. If I receive a cultivation license, my business will only be allowed to operate half of the canopy that this amendment proposes, but I cannot own or operate any retail locations. This is not a level playing field. There is no legitimate reason why a medical duopoly should be rewarded with such unfair advantages. This alleged craft industry will quickly become monopolized by tribes and MSOs if this amendment passes. The recently leaked tribal compacts already create unfair monopolistic advantages for 10 tribal entities, allowing unfair advantages for medical combo license holders, which is an uncapped license category, would be the nail in the coffin for most Minnesota entrepreneurs hoping to participate in this industry. Rumors have circulated that the current medical operators may leverage the threat of leaving the state and its cannabis patients if their demands aren't met. If true, I say good riddance.
Sir, about 20 seconds left.
There are plenty of cultivators like myself who will gladly fill the void. I am asking on behalf of many like-minded individuals to stick with the original intent of legalization in Minnesota, a craft market for Minnesotans harmed by prohibition, your constituents. Those who put their faith in you making their voices heard. Thank you.
Thank you for your testimony this morning. Again, our next testifier this morning is Richard Brahma, available on Zoom. And just for my clarification, Mr. Wenzel? Very good. Yep. And then if Mr. Michael Ford could take the chair on the opposite side of Representative West to keep things going. Michael Ford. Right. All right. With that, Mr. Brahma, welcome to the committee. If you will state your name and proceed with your testimony. You do have about 2 minutes to testify this morning. Thank you.
I'll keep it short. Richard Brahma, BKR Brands. A lot of other individuals have spoken on my concerns. Had we known this license was available, would have put our resources towards applying for this license type. It's an unfair advantage. It's going to open up the door. We're going to see out-of-state operators come in, and it's going to be a struggle for small businesses to the point that it makes us reconsider our position. So I hope that's taken into consideration. There's a lot of people that have invested significant resources for a craft market and the opportunity to compete and have success. This will make it very difficult for us to come into this market and compete. I am all about the medical program. It's the cause that brought me into this industry, so I support the medical program. It's not fair to have the advantages that they will on the recreational side. And more so, all of us that would have the ability to apply for the super license most likely would have put the resources towards this license type. I strongly urge the committee to remember the way that this medical bill initially was written and what the recreational bill was supposed to stand up, which was local Minnesota operators. And I know a lot of us have 7+ figures invested. So yes, it may not be as significant as the medical companies, but it is significant to us as individuals. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Brahma, for your testimony. And with that, again, asking for Michael Ford, if Michael Ford is here to take the chair on the opposite side of where Representative West is. And following Mr. Ford will be Kat Franklin, if you are available as well. Make your way toward the front. Mr. Wenzel, if you go ahead and identify yourself for the record and proceed with your testimony. Welcome to the committee.
Thank you all. I'm Chris Wenzel with BKR Brands and Swerve Beverages. I represent the Minnesota locals. We all feel the same thing. You guys can tell what we're all saying. I was a medical patient in 2016. I'm an advocate, I've always have been, but it's not fair to last minute switch up the playbook like what everyone said. The meeting we had, they couldn't even tell us what the square footage they currently had, so there's some concerns there. just to cut it short, I mean, it's obvious what we're all asking for. So oppose this bill and protect the local Minnesota economy and let us do what we've been trying to do for over a year now. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Wenzel, for your testimony. Again, Kat Franklin. And then because we have a capacity cap in the room, some of the testifiers that were on the list may have been missed, but as people have left the room, the sergeant office is able to allow more people into the room. If you were pre-signed to testify and we did not get to you, I'm going to ask after we're done with Ms. Franklin's testimony to identify yourself. We'll bring you up, and then if there's anyone else from the public who would like to testify that had not had a chance to sign up, we will give you an opportunity as well. Ms. Franklin, if you will go ahead and identify yourself for the record and proceed with your testimony. Good morning and welcome to the committee.
Thank you for having me. My name is Kat or Catherine Franklin. I'm speaking to you as a true cannabis
operator
and expert.
Could you just pull the mic just a little closer?
Sorry.
There you go.
Some might call me as a super community, but over the last, 50 plus years of my life, I've lived in Minnesota, but I've actually operated in other states since 2016 as a medical and adult use operator. So a lot of these things that are going on, I've seen it all, I've heard it all. But what I'm seeing right now is something that's a play against what Minnesota truly wanted. As an operator in other states, I was truly hopeful to be able to actually do what I do the best way I possibly can where my children reside. Operating to this fullest and allowing two gromlets to be able to take over a market that is already closed for licensing. These licensing types are completely fulfilled by micros and mesos, which is the craft cannabis that we all wanted here in Minnesota. When Minnesota legalized adult use in 2023, their clear vision was a craft-oriented industry that prioritized small businesses, social equity, and local entrepreneurs. Now, I want to take a quote from an article that was published last week that says from the Five Witness News that the current business that wants to grow and sell products for recreational medical uses are facing economy challenges that would force them to pull out of a medical marijuana program. I think that we're going to see operators forced to pull off, says Schroeder. They would have to pull a pretty large risk in order to grow cannabis for medical use. That, to me, is saying, if you're not going to give us what you want, we're not going to supply your medical demands. And that is horrible that two out-of-state companies would state that for our medical patients. I do want to remind you that HF 100 was created for a level playing field for small businesses and applicants, but this is not going to do that. What this is going to do is allow two companies to drop the bottom dollar. Micros and mesos are not going to be able to get the first year advantage like they all were promised.
Ms. Franklin,
micros
give you about
and mesos
20 seconds
are
here.
Ready. We've been ready for at least a year, open, and all we're waiting for is endorsements. We just need the okay and also to let the lottery happen. I have a lot more to say, but obviously everyone before me did. I have a lot of passion in this. I please ask you to table this for another time. We're going to reevaluate everything as we evolve, but right now is not the time to change a license type when licensing is already closed. Thank you.
Thank you. Again, as I had mentioned before, I had Ms. Franklin's testimony. Is there anyone who has now been able to make it in the room that had pre-signed up? We'll ask you to start making your way to the testifying table, and then we will have some time to be able to take other testimony. Sir, if you'll go ahead and make your way to the testifying table, we'll have you identify yourself and proceed with your testimony.
Whichever side you wish.
Good morning and welcome to the committee. I'll give you about 2 minutes, and you are?
Yes, my name is Nathan Young.
Very good.
The Vice Policy Chair for the Minnesota Black Chamber of Commerce.
Welcome to the committee, and again, just state your name one more time for the record and proceed with your testimony.
My name is Nathan Young. I'm the Policy Vice Chair and Cannabis Policy Lead for the Minnesota Black Chamber of Commerce, and I will keep my comments brief. In addition to being a fair market advocate, I'm a longtime student of cannabis market dynamics. One thing that I agree with on this bill is that the unification of supply chain is a positive step. I also believe that the MSOs, GTI and Vireo, have a strong role to play in the state's cannabis market. They're not the boogeyman, and they have done a great deal of service to the Minnesota community thus far. Nevertheless, I am testifying in opposition to this bill because it simply goes too far, too late. It goes too far in that it allows well-capitalized MSOs who already have a head start to have double the retail count and double the canopy size of the next non-vertically integrated licenses in a so-called super license. It's way too far. And it introduces these new super licenses after thousands of Minnesotans have allocated their time and energy around rules and licenses that are already set. None of these thousands of Minnesota businesses had the opportunity to apply for these licenses. It's too late. So when I say I'm a student of, you know, market dynamics, one thing that I always look at in terms of how these markets work is there's a crash in terms of the amount of canopy that is available and the price per pound. It is going to start off with a shortage of canopy, but as these micro businesses and meso businesses come online, there will be a glut of inventory that will kind of crash the market. If we allow these medical MSOs to have double the canopy count of the next cultivator, I feel that's really only going to exacerbate the issue. I feel that the authors of HF 100 got it right the first time and that this amendment just goes too far, too late. Thank you.
Thank you for your time, Mr. Young. Is there anyone else who had signed up that has been able to make their way in the room? By my count, I'm still looking for a Michael Ford. All right, we do have an opportunity for a few more members of the public, if you did not get a chance to testify, to share your thoughts on House File that is before us, 2426 as amended. Anyone else from the public who has not had a chance to testify that would like to share their thoughts this morning? Good morning and welcome. If you will go ahead and identify yourself for the record and proceed with your testimony. We'll give you about a minute and a half or so since you weren't on the list.
Sure
thing. We want to make sure that Representative West can address many of the questions that came up here this morning. So welcome. Identify yourself and proceed.
Sounds good. My name is Emmett Dysart. I am a co-founder of the Cannabis Awareness Education Council for Youth. Some of the work that we've been able to accomplish has been great, and I'm just so happy to see that the market is still growing. I'm here today to oppose the bill that is on the table. The idea of the social equitable applicants and how they were delayed for this entire process and still have yet to kind of enter the market is frustrating. Knowing that there's so many different people that the MSO, GTI, and Viera are bringing up, like the 55,000, the number that they used, that doesn't represent the entire Minnesota. I'm here today to know, or to let folks know that young people are watching. I'm here representing a network of over 100 young people who are passionate about cannabis and education, and I know that obviously, they can't all be here today, but to know that there are things happening that are that seem sly, right? It doesn't feel right, and it's not the initial intention of what I know the cannabis bill originally had. So I just wanted to let it be known that young people are very passionate about the things going on in these rooms. And if we're going to encourage our future leaders to, you know, do right, let's do right now so that they have some footsteps to follow. Thank you.
Thank you for your testimony this morning. Anyone else from the public who would like to testify on the matter before the committee? All right. We have you make your way, and it looks like you will be the last testifier. And then I don't know, I don't have any member questions. Remember, this is going to be laid over. I would like to give Representative West the opportunity to respond. With that, good morning and welcome to the committee. If you want to state your name and proceed with your testimony.
Yes, Jeff Brinkman from Superior Cannabis Company in Austin, Minnesota. We were one of the early starters in the hemp industry, which has absolutely been decimated in Minnesota, and we see all these products on the shelves, and very few of them will be coming from Minnesota, and very few of them will be utilizing Minnesota hemp. This year will be the first year that I haven't planted hemp since 2018, because there is no market for products where people can get online and get twice the potency or three times the potency in hemp products from any other state or majority of other states. You've decimated this by 10 and 20 and 30% a year to the point where it's not worth staying in business. So then we look at the cannabis market, which we're not even licensed yet, and now we're going to move the needle and create an even bigger advantage for the existing companies that have been propped up since 2014. In 2020, the Office of the Legislative Auditor said to diversify the medical market because this exact threat would happen, that they're going to leave the state if there was anything that was adverse to their business model. What did we do? We didn't do any diversification at all. And you're going to invite people into this cannabis market on a micro license and then get crushed by the tribes and medical. And you know that.
Sir, about 20 seconds left in your testimony. Thank you.
I appreciate it. But think about the people and not the corporations. Thank you.
Thank you. We have three member questions. Real quick?
Quick.
I mean, like, real quick.
Sure.
All right.
Minute and a half.
I'm going to have to let you go for like less than a minute because we've opened
we'll
it
see.
Up.
We'll
and I have three members, two co-authors, and someone else on the committee
we'll
who's
see
involved
how
in this matter.
It.
So identify yourself for the record.
My name is Bobby Yarnt. I'm a local owner of a grow shop here in Minneapolis. I'm here to strongly oppose HF 2426. This bill proposes a drastic and deeply concerning shift in the structure of Minnesota's emerging cannabis industry, one that would give medical combination businesses an overwhelming and unfair advantage in adult use market. Just under 2 weeks ago, thousands of hopeful entrepreneurs across the state submitted applications for cannabis business licenses. Each of these individuals made significant financial, professional, and personal commitments based on a clearly defined set of rules laid out by the Office of Cannabis Management. HF 2426 proposes to rewrite those rules before the ink is even dry. How can any prospective cannabis business owner or their investors have confidence in this market if the framework is already being rewritten to benefit existing corporate interests? This kind of sudden, lopsided legislative action does not promote fairness, transparency, or stability. Instead, it undermines the trust that is absolutely essential for a healthy and inclusive cannabis economy. Furthermore, the foundational goal of Minnesota's cannabis legalization was to transition the legacy market to the legal one, to create a fair, regulated system that gives small businesses and impacted communities a genuine opportunity. HF 2426 runs completely counter to that vision, and it sends a clear message that large corporate medical operators will be allowed to dominate the space before businesses have even had a chance to open their doors. I think what Representative West fails to mention is that the bill removes nearly all the requirements for a medical combination business. Not only does it remove any ratio, but it also removes any minimum medical participation requirement. How is it fair that these medical combination businesses can now cultivate 90,000 square feet entirely for the adult rec market with this combo license? How is that fair to cultivator applicants? How is that? Instead of removing all the checks and instead of removing all the checks and balances for medical combination businesses, why don't we instead focus our time in removing the barriers to entry for micro and meso businesses? If we remove the ratio requirement for medical combination businesses, we also should reduce reducing that canopy level. If there's no minimum
to exit
I also think it's a false narrative to assume that recreational dispensaries aren't knowledgeable about medical cannabis. My business partner is a registered nurse, and I can't count the number of times we've had a medical patient in our shop and mentioned they have learned more in 15 minutes in our shop than they have over years of being a patient at a medical dispensary like Rise. If Minnesota is serious about equity, opportunity, and long-term sustainability, the medical cannabis market, the HF 2426, must be rejected. To approve it now would not only be appalling, it would be fatal to the integrity of our market. Thank you.
We have two co-authors who I'm going to give an opportunity to speak to as well, and then I'm going to end with Representative Stevenson, who has also been a testifier and a member who's been working in this space. We'll go with Representative Hewitt, Representative Allen, for some brief comments, and then Representative Stevenson, we'll have some brief comments from you, and then I will give you, Representative West, the final opportunity to wrap up this morning. Representative Hewitt.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, for the opportunity, and thank you, Representative West.
You've done great. You've really pushed this bill, and you committed to that when I went on the bill. I was really hoping for peace in the universe here, and we didn't make it. And so I'm going to have to pull my support at this time, but I know that you're going to keep working on this because it's going to be laid over. I trust that you will, and I hope I can bring back to support. So thank you, Representative West, for your hard work on this bill. Definitely need some work.
Thank you, Representative Hewitt. Representative Allen is a co-author.
Thank you again, Representative West, for bringing this forward. I will echo Representative Hewitt's comments. We're kind of hoping for peace in the valley, but like you said before, it's an ongoing conversation, and it's something to be appreciated, and appreciate everything that you've done to put into this particular bill. So, with that, I'll.
Thank you, Representative Allen. Representative Stevenson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And, you know, I think what we've heard today is that finding a balance between having a legitimate medical market that serves patients and trying to have small craft producers is difficult. This was a central struggle of House File 100 when we passed it in 2023. And these conversations were all very familiar. We landed in a specific place in 2023. I'm not here to say that that place that we landed is perfect, but it was trying to balance all of these voices that you heard today. I don't think that this bill is a good adjustment to that balance. It's not to say that what happened in 2020 is perfect and couldn't be changed, but I don't think that this moves us in the right direction. And in particular, I think Dr. Dabney's comments were really insightful, and I would support much of what he said. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Representative Stevenson, thank you. Before I turn to Representative West for his final comments, members, there were a number of pieces of written testimony that were included in your packets. Also, keep the two DE amendments in your packet for tomorrow's conversation. Representative West will give you the final word. Representative West.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. As you heard from a lot of the testifiers, there is an issue. There is disagreement on how to address it. There is some agreement, though, as you heard from some testifiers, that we're advocating for against the bill, but did identify positive spots in the bill, particularly the supply chain issue, selling to other cannabis businesses. One thing I would like to correct is the medical companies did not threaten to pull out. You didn't hear that today. They have never said that. There is an article that person cited that is somebody else saying that. I think the medical companies likely can survive early, but as the medical market dwindles, that is very much in jeopardy, and if you can't have a profitable business, then you can't continue to supply products to consumers. I am enthusiastic about working on this bill, so please, everybody who testified today, I will genuinely listen to you and work on the input. One thing about the canopy is in current law, it's at 60,000. It was moved up to 90,000 and then back down to 60,000. We're going to look at the requirements. We added some new ones in the amendment to require them to maintain stock and prioritize medical patients. We can work on that and expand that, but the current situation is not perfect, as Representative Stevenson has said, and there can be some improvements, and I believe we can find some improvements that help everyone. And last, I actually agree with what a lot of the Yelly McYellerson was saying. We should help and expand what the current applicants can do. I'm all about that, but that is a whole nother can of worms. That is for another
Representative
day.
West, we are out of time. Thank you for your testimony and for the bill today. And members, thank you for your patience and those who testified today. With that, I will lay over House 2426 as amended, and we are adjourned.